This is Time and Change, a three-part podcast celebrating 50 years of co-ed undergraduate singing at Yale. In 1969, Yale University accepted its first undergraduate women. In part one of this podcast, you'll hear how those women were admitted, what the atmosphere was like on campus when they arrived, and how they became a part of Yale singing. The story is all told by the people who lived it. The only one who doesn't identify himself is longtime Glee Club conductor Fenno Heath, class of 1950. He died in 2008, shortly after recording an archival interview.
The Glee Club was a wonderful integration into Yale in an environment that wasn't quite sure it really wanted women.
The esprit de corps of the SATB mixed group actually added a huge amount of excitement because you were going not just to sing and drink, not just to sing as a male group, but you had this interaction between men and women and doing things together that was exciting.
Fenno deserves tremendous credit for bringing women into the Glee Club.
I learned more from the change to mixed chorus than I would ever have learned otherwise.
My name is Bob Barnes, class of 1971. I was in the freshman Glee Club in my freshman year, the Apollo Glee Club my sophomore year, and was president of the Glee Club in my senior year. I've often said that Yale did the right thing for the wrong reasons. I had this sense, and I think most people did, that the reason Yale wanted to bring in women was because if it didn't, it would increasingly lose the best male applicants to other schools that did have women.
Though we have had our chances for overnight romances with the Harvard and the Dartmouth Belle, and though we've had a bunch in tow from Princeton Junction, we're saving ourselves for Yale.
My name currently is Joanne Weibel Kant. My name at Yale was Joanne Weibel, and I was class of 1973. They had come out with a newspaper article, the New York Times, the summer before about the superwomen that were coming to Yale. And we just all seemed like we weren't superwomen, we were just normal women.
My name is Sam Chauncey, and I was in the Yale class of 1957. In the afternoon of my graduation, I started work at Yale as an assistant dean of Yale College. And then Kingman Brewster made me his chief of staff when he became president. And then in 1972, I was made secretary and vice president of the university.
I'm Ellen Marshall. I was class of 71 at Yale. Before they actually announced that they were accepting women, they had something called Co-Ed Week. And I spent a week at Yale going to classes and staying in the residential college.
Avi Soifer, who I think was in the class of 1970, came into my office one day and announced that 400 women were coming to Yale to spend a week. They were going to live in the dormitory and they were going to pay for their own meals. Well, of course, we didn't allow women in the dormitories at that particular period. But the ploy was wonderful because there was no way we could say no.
And I decided I wanted to go to Yale, but they hadn't said they'd let women in. So I filled out a transfer application and mailed it in. A few weeks later, I got it back in the mail saying the women had to fill out the pink form instead of the blue form. By then, they had announced they were admitting women, but they had a separate form, and in a humorous, perhaps, effort, they made it pink. And I had to copy my answers over from the blue form to the pink form.
President Brewster asked me to work with Mrs. Elga Wasserman, who had been an assistant dean of the graduate school, to implement and hopefully make coeducation go well.
My name is Darcy Walker, Yale class of 1971. I was at Wellesley, and I filled out my application midnight of the day it was due. I decided I didn't like the questions they asked, so I rewrote the questions. Everybody was getting their acceptances, and I was not, so I called the Yale admissions office and said, you know, everybody's got an answer, am I coming? And they said yes, and I hung up, and then I got worried that I so wanted them to say yes that I hadn't really listened to what they said, so I called them back. And I said, I know I think you just told me I'm accepted at Yale, but could you confirm that? You could hear them laughing. And they said, yes, Ms. Walker, you are coming to Yale.
I had been one of the proponents of coeducation, and I had actually opposed the original plan, which was to have Vassar College come to New Haven so that we would have a coordinate college the way Harvard and Radcliffe, Brown and Pembroke did, because I wanted real coeducation.
My name is Sarah Heath. I was in the class of 73, the first freshman class of women at Yale. Benno Heath was my father. They made the decision quite late. You didn't think about it for years. Oh, I want to go to Yale. I'm going to go to Yale. It just happened. I think my whole family was surprised that suddenly women were coming to Yale, and even more surprised that I got in and that I decided to go, because this is my hometown. And of course, I had grown up in a completely different Yale. I was here all the time in Hendry Hall as a little kid with men. And those men were in suits and ties. And I thought of Yale as being that kind of place. So when I finally did come, it was all kinds of people, a lot of hippies, and men had long hair. And everything was quite different from the Yale I thought I was going to.
About half of the male undergraduates were opposed to coeducation. A number of the faculty were opposed to coeducation. And they had to be educated as to proper behavior, we might say. Then we had an interesting group of people who were women who worked at Yale who were opposed to coeducation. And these were women who might have been a reference librarian or a head of college assistant. They were either older women and the mothers, in quotation marks, of the young men at Yale, or they were younger women and they dated the young men at Yale. So there were some women who were very unhappy about the admission of undergraduate women.
I'm Linus Travers. I graduated with an undergraduate degree in 1958 and had the good fortune to be in the Yale Glee Club, the Apollo Glee Club, and the Freshman Glee Club, actually, in reverse order. There was a sense of outrage and almost personal affront when Yale elected to become a coeducational institution. How many times in the Yale Alumni magazine would we see a letter saying, "I'll never give another cent to Yale now that it has done this terrible deed."
Contrary to some belief at the time, the alumni were actually not opposed to coeducation. There were some who were opposed to the idea of admitting less than 1,000 men each year. They were not opposed to incremental addition of women. And why were they not opposed? Because they all had daughters.
I'm a legacy. Both my father and my uncle went to Yale. The men in my family weren't quite sure women should be at Yale, but once I got accepted, of course, they all got on board.
We decided not to use the traditional Yale criteria of test scores and grades in high school and so on. We decided to look for qualities in the individual woman that showed that she could probably handle a tough situation. For example, we were quick to admit a young woman who had four brothers, or we were quick to admit a woman who had achieved a kind of national recognition as perhaps a violinist or an athlete or in some other way, because we thought in order to have that kind of concentration and drive, she had to be a tough person. So there was a kind of different admission in those early years because we knew that the women were coming to an institution that was innately, in some ways, hostile.
It was complete chaos. It was like a circus. We had a moose in our fireplace for some reason, huge moose head. And there were four girls, all different races, from all different places in the United States, and this tiny room. And men seemed to be all over the place. You felt like you were almost in an experiment.
My name is Patricia Williams. During college, I went by my nickname, Pixie Williams. I was class of 73, going to a girls' school for 10 years, K through 12. I had a pretty strong sense of my competence as a student and my identity because, you know, at a girls' school, if you're in the science class and it's all girls, the science teacher comes up and says, "Hey, you're really strong in science. Think about a career in science." You're not competing for the teacher's attention. You're not dealing with any unconscious biases.
Now,
The men were very mixed, quite a number. Clearly were not thrilled we were there and would never cease to remind us that we could never get a Rhodes Scholarship or a Wilson Fellowship and that we were taking the place of a man who was going to earn a living and support a family.
At that time, we had no female role models. There were no women in charge of companies. There were no Supreme Court justices who were women. Women simply were not seen as leaders. So the idea that Yale, which was committed to training leaders, would invite women to come in. But it certainly wasn't so that they would become leaders. It was so that they would support the men. It was clearly the wrong reason, but it was the right thing to do.
In my view, we women just sort of slid in to slots that were already pretty well mapped out by our brethren and went about our business.
The decision to admit women was made in the fall of 68, and the first women arrived in the fall of 1969. We did not have any additional dormitory rooms. We hadn't had time, obviously, to do that. Many of the buildings at Yale did not have a ladies' room. And then there were the questions of athletics and singing, and most importantly, what I refer to as the parasite organizations. Parasite organizations are the ones that exist in and around Yale, which, if Yale failed, they would fail. So I'm talking about Morey's, I'm talking about the Yale Club of New York, I'm talking about the senior societies, and each of them were steadfastly opposed to admitting women.
The thing I might have been least prepared for was being such a small minority and being seen and watched. It was pretty strange, particularly the first year, because Yale was right on this threshold between the old traditions of the students from Smith and Vassar and other girls' schools all sort of getting bussed in, and then these 500 undergraduate women that had been admitted that were living and eating side by side every day. So when the weekends came, I know I felt very kind of marginalized and like, oh my God, where do I fit in with this weird dating ritual? But during the week, we were constantly being watched by everybody, our every move, how we dressed. Gentlemen songsters off on a spree. What we said in class, I was in at least one class where I was the only female. So it was definitely a very strange situation.
Originally, I thought it was going to be fabulous because, oh my goodness, it's a ratio of 8 guys to 1 girl. But it wasn't always that fabulous, particularly the upperclassmen. Many of them were set in their ways and had dates and had girlfriends from other schools, and a lot of them weren't that interested in interacting with women.
You'd be sitting there with these guys that you see every morning in the dining hall at breakfast, and your favorite, I've just gotten out of bed and I'm rushing to class, look. And then on the weekends, all the imports would come in from the various surrounding women's colleges for mixers, for dates, and they're all looking perfectly coiffed and dressed. So that made for an interesting contrast and environment.
If she be not so to me, what care I how fair she be?
A great deal of the push to admit women to Yale was part of a culture which I have described in a book I wrote as the period of challenge to authority.
In that great it not born in,
this is a period of the beginning of the environmental movement, the beginning of the feminine movement. It is, of course, very importantly, the period of civil rights, the gay and lesbian movement with the Stonewall riots. So this is an era in which younger people in particular were challenging authority and taking the risks that one has to take if you're going to make your challenge work.
In that grave, it's not morning, farewell, farewell, farewell.
It was a very political time at Yale, an era that was going through a tremendous change from generation to generation. We had the Black Panthers, we had SDS, the Vietnam War hadn't yet ended, the draft was a very real thing.
People may not recall clearly that the environment we were in was so volatile and non-normal that whole year. Campuses all over the United States were erupting with anti-Vietnam War protests. The Kent State killings happened on May 4th. In addition, the New Haven situation was even worse than most campus communities because there was the Bobby Seale trial going on. Bobby Seale was a leader of the Black Panther organization, militant civil rights organization, and he was being tried for murder, which he ultimately was acquitted from. But people flooded in from all over the country onto the New Haven Green. And there was a huge eruption of protest, and it was happening right outside the windows of Henry Hall.
I recently found a record from 6970. The cover of that just has an empty Henry Hall Glee Club room. And there's one man looking out a window, unidentified. It's not Fenno, and I don't know if it's anyone in the Glee Club. He's looking out the window, and you get the feeling that everything is going on outside that window, not inside Yale, but outside Yale. That is what it was like then. Students would be streaming onto the green and taking part in all kinds of protests, riots, marches. It was a very frightening time, actually. There were times when tear gas was being thrown, and there were people at Yale involved. William Sloan Coffin was very involved in trying to get people out of the draft or helping them to do protests, and it was a borderline violent situation. It made being a student at Yale hard. I didn't want to stay inside the buildings just thinking about what we're doing here in the classroom, because that didn't seem as important as going out and really participating in our government and trying to stop that war, which was threatening the lives of people that I knew and killing many others that I didn't see any reason for them to be killed.
Kingman Brewster was very cool. He basically kept the Yale campus from exploding, unlike Harvard and Columbia. He and the admissions director, who had purposely admitted a very different class for the last couple of years at Yale, making it more diverse, more energetic. The 68 to 71 era at Yale is an era that will never be repeated in history.
Co-education was not the most important thing that was changing. That was sort of the least of our issues. I never felt like co-education was such a big deal, except that I got to be part of it. And in that respect, it was a pretty big deal.
You're listening to Time and Change, a three-part podcast celebrating 50 years of co-ed undergraduate singing at Yale, told by the people who lived it. Part one included performances by the Yale Glee Club and its alumni, the Yale Band, the Whiffenpoofs, and the Yale Banjos. For a complete list of performers, interviewees, and repertoire, please visit the Yale Glee Club website. I'm Naomi Lewin, podcast producer.